You're listening to Beyond the Ribbon, a podcast of the Cancer Survivorship Center, powered by 24 Hours in the Canyon. This podcast is brought to you by Auto Inc. Auto Inc. is a distinguished family of dealerships redefining automotive excellence. Be sure to check out their website at autoinc.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ribbon. My name is Ryan Parnell, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and oncology nurse, Pam McMillan.
Ryan, you know, this year I'm excited about all of our upcoming podcasts, but I'm really excited about today's. You and I have talked about a lot of topics throughout the years that we've done the podcast. Whenever I was preparing for this podcast, I listened to our guest, his book, and got through most of it. It touches on almost everything that we have covered. It wraps it up in a bow and in a pretty little book. And I'm super excited to listen to our guest today. How about you?
I am too. Just as you said, sometimes it seems like we talk about some of the same stuff, like a broken record, but in reality, it's coming in a different package. It's coming in a different presentation, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And there's always some great nuggets to take away. And I can guarantee you, you guys that are listening today will be no different. There'll be a lot of good nuggets. So let me tell you about our guest. Pam, we pull some fantastic guests. And today's episode, no pressure on our guest, but today's episode is representative of some of the folks that we end up locating and finding and getting to come on this crazy podcast that we do. But we're very blessed today to have Dr. Edward Cragen, or Dr. Ed, as he sometimes goes by. He's a cancer specialist who practiced at Mayo Clinic for more than 40 Minnesota winters. And I'm telling you, on a day like today, I can guarantee it's cold up there. Until he transitioned into the digital wellness arena in late 2018. He was the first Mayo Clinic consultant board certified in hospice and palliative medicine, which we've talked about on occasions. He was named Outstanding Educator from the Mayo Clinic School of Continuing Education and has received the Distinguished Mayo Clinician Award, which is Mayo Clinic's highest honor. He completed an elective term as president of the Mayo staff as well. In 2015, he received the Ellis Island Medal of Honor for contributions of descendants of immigrants. Now, Pam, this is the cool thing. As if those other things weren't enough, he's the author of over 500 scientific papers and has given more than 1,000 presentations throughout the world.
Ryan, I think that calls for an expert, right?
That's all we have. It really does. But here's the other thing. He is also the author of the triple award-winning book, which now been revised for information on COVID and telemedicine. And his book is called How Not to Be My Patient, A Physician's Secrets for Staying Healthy and Surviving Any Diagnosis. Dr. Ed, thank you for joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, thanks, Ryan, Pam. A gift to be here. So time is limited. So let's jump right into this.
Absolutely.
What do patients need to know when they're faced with a serious diagnosis of cancer? And I think once the word cancer is mentioned, many of us go on autopilot. Nothing that we say beyond that registers. It's like any one of us getting very bad news. So all of our discussions are in this book, which is on Amazon. That'd be the easy way to get it. How Not to Be My Patient. And the last name is Cragen, Cragan. And we have a website called askdoctored.com. So all this information is out there. But let's say, Lord forbid, you wake up on a Monday morning, you have a lump in the breast, you're concerned. Let's suppose there is blood in the urine, you're concerned. Let's suppose there is a malignant melanoma, a black mole cancer. So you seek the guidance of your primary physician. And I think the primary physicians have one of the most difficult tasks in medicine. They're bombarded with information. They're stressed. They're dealing with an electronic medical record, which is impossible to understand. And it's no surprise that many of them are retiring early. So what does that mean to you and I when we have a problem? Okay, the primary physician or the nurse practitioner does appropriate studies And let's suppose the biopsy demonstrates a lump in the breast. Usually in your home community, there would be a surgeon or a group of surgeons who would do the biopsy and then discuss options and alternatives. But the management of cancer is absolutely bewildering. For example, the body of information about cancer, the number of studies due to cancer treatments doubles every 70 days. So nobody can keep on top of this stuff. So I think as patients, you have the right and to some extent the responsibility to seek another opinion, typically with a medical oncologist. The oncologist acts as the quarterback. He runs the show, she runs the show, because the primary care doc and the general surgeon are typically not prepared to deal with these issues. Let me give you an example. Many of our listeners are aware of tumor markers. For example, one is called the BRCA, and if you have this, you have a high risk of cancer. A Mayo Clinic study was published this morning that showed that some of those markers are totally irrelevant and have no bearing on your well-being. So you're told you have this marker. A week ago, we were told that's dreadful. We now know that that marker was irrelevant. So we need to speak to an expert, and that may mean a visit to a comprehensive cancer center. And obviously, in the panhandle, you have some of the top places in the world. So number one, seek a second opinion if you're not comfortable. Number two, ask your provider about the natural history of your illness. Doc, what do you expect will happen at some point in the future? And if he says, I don't know, that's not really accurate, because we do know within reason what the track record of certain cancers might be. Here we are in January. Let's suppose, Lord forbid, we're diagnosed with advanced cancer of the pancreas. The survival would be about 4 to 6 months in general. I would want to know that ballpark figure. That would help me welcome back the prodigal son, that errant daughter that we never got along with. That would help me tighten up financial records. And by the way, every one of us should visit with an attorney and visit with a financial wizard. My wife and I went through this a few years ago. We spent about 30 hours with these folks so that if I died, my wife Peggy would make one phone call, because the grieving widow is in no position to deal with all these financial issues and tax forms and that sort of thing. So we owe it to ourselves to make sure that those details are tightened up. And every patient's, Doc, don't worry, I've done everything. Trust me, nobody does everything. There could be a leak in this estate plan and it can cause a nightmare. And families are different now. You know, a generation ago, everybody got along. People were married for 100 years. They even looked like each other. They finished each other's sentences. But today, it's a different ballgame. We won't go down that road, but I think you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And around the bedside can be stepchildren and different relationships that don't even know each other. And if it's not written down, it will not happen. So these are called advanced directives. Two parts. Number one, whom do we want to speak for us if we can't speak for ourselves? Lord forbid one of us is driving home today. We have a head injury. We're on a respirator. If we don't write down, we can be maintained in a vegetative state almost for years. Almost for years. So number one, who speaks for us? And it's not necessarily our spouse. This may be someone else. Number two, what level of aggressive care do we want? With the onset of COVID, Peggy and I changed our advanced directives. We put a timetable. If one of us is hospitalized and we are not better by day 20, in the opinion of our providers, We do not want the continuation of blood pressure medicines, antibiotics, ventilators, and all that sort of stuff. So please write it down. And let me share with our listeners one court case, not to become attorneys, but we need to know about this. And the case is called Schiavo, S-C-H-I-A-V-O. S-C-H-I-A-V-O. This is a woman in Florida. She had a cardiac arrest. She never spelled out what level of care she wanted. And I believe this went to the Supreme Court in the state of Florida. And I think the Supreme Court in Washington got involved. None of us want to deal with that stuff. So spell everything out. Always remember that regardless of the seriousness of the problem, there is always an option. There is always an alternative. And you owe it to yourselves to get a second opinion. Now, equally importantly, medicine is stressful. At the medical encounter, many times we do not remember what we are told. And let me give you a personal testimonial. At 1:40 in the afternoon, on the afternoon of Tuesday, May 14th, I was on my way to see the dentist. And this was one of these days where there was peace in the valley. The stars had aligned. All the tea leaves were heading in the right direction. And life was good. And I tell you this because I was not distracted going to see the dentist. And it was a routine dental procedure. I lost consciousness for about 12 seconds. I crossed the highway and I plowed into a brick building, which was part of a shopping center. And the first thing I remember is the sound of glass and metal, screeching tires and bricks bouncing off the hood of the car and the windshield. This was about 10 to 12 seconds. I don't know what happened. Traffic is complicated. We don't even turn on the radio in the car. So I was totally focused. I was by myself. So in about 2 seconds, the SWAT team shows up, the paramedics show up, and I couldn't breathe. They put me in the back of the ambulance and basically said, pal, we don't know if you're going to make it. They took me to St. Mary's Hospital, which is one of the hospitals for Mayo Clinic. Four women trauma surgeons said, who do you want us to call? It was not Ghostbusters. We called Peggy. And she said, well, I'm having my hair done. Is it really that serious? you can't make this up, folks. The nurses and the surgeon said, no, you better get here. So over the course of 2 days, had every test in the book, and nobody knew what happened. So finally, we met some of the Mayo experts here. And my wife said to the experts, gee, do you think maybe he had sleep apnea? Do you think maybe he fell asleep? Now, I'm a very smart, good-looking surgeon, medical oncologist. Of course not. But in fact, I had sleep apnea. So what I'm trying to say, when it's the 11th hour, when you're in the red zone, so to speak, and time's running out, have someone with you because you're not thinking straight. So whether it's a spouse, friend, partner, whomever, be sure you bring someone with you. Otherwise, opportunities may be missed. So I think it's important when you see that provider, write things down. No more than three concerns, not a laundry list of 17 things, because the doc, he or she, is restricted to about 11 minutes. So by all means, understand that this is a stressful situation. You may feel fine, but you need someone to speak for you. Equally importantly, understand how your electronic record works.
Yeah.
Everybody in the hospital would be willing to sit down with you and grandma and show us how to work this thing. It's not straightforward. And I've often made the comment, there'll be a special place in the afterlife for whoever has designed these electronic health records. And it ain't going to be a warm, fuzzy place. But we need to know, when's our next appointment? Who's going to fill our medications? What's the dose in the schedule? I had a notice on my tablet about an hour ago. Guess what? 6:30 in the morning, on the last Monday in January, I have an appointment. I never knew about it. It was for a hearing test. So you have to look at this thing, because no one's going to knock on your door and ask you, is everything okay? Are you satisfied with your care? Who's going to renew your medications? So we need to be empowered. We need to understand how the system works, or we may not get the care that we need and that we deserve.
Dr. Ed, may I interrupt you for just a moment?
Yes, yes.
So with the electronic records, you know, it's right on our fingertips, and patients oftentimes get their results before they see the patient.
Yes.
Or the doctor. So how should patients deal with that scenario? You know, they want to know the information, but they don't want to know. They're not going to see the doctor. They don't fully understand it. And then I feel like that causes a lot of anxiety and stress, and maybe unnecessary.
Oh, Pam, absolutely. This is another nightmare where, let's suppose, Lord forbid, you or Ryan have a routine situation. A biopsy is done. Nobody is expecting any problem. The biopsy shows a bad problem. It's always on a Saturday morning or Super Bowl Sunday. You see this report and you can't find your provider. I think this is the kind of situation where we should feel comfortable to call the provider. And if he's not available, somebody is on call and say, look, I'm terrified. I don't know what this means. I don't think this is a good situation. And usually that provider, who may not know you, can at least allay your anxiety. This happened to me many years ago. We were about to leave for a mission trip to Guatemala. We were sitting in church, and I noticed pain over my backbone, and I just felt uncomfortable. I said, Peggy, take a look at this. And she said, well, you have a cyst over your upper spine between your shoulder blades. And that's what I thought it was. So obviously, I went to see my primary, and he said, this is a sebaceous cyst, nothing to worry about, but you don't want to get this infected in the jungles of Central America. Let's remove it. So Mayo is the epitome of subspecialties. So the cyst specialist, I'm not kidding, removes this thing. He said, this will take about 10 minutes on an outpatient basis. I was laying on my belly, and an hour later, he was still operating. And I could hear him saying, more than I expected. So he sews it up. This was on a Thursday. And he said, I think we have a problem, but we better wait for the final pathology report. So on Sunday, I log on and I read the report. This was a poorly differentiated soft tissue sarcoma consistent with a leiomyosarcoma. This was the start of a bad week. Now, patients don't have to know the name of this cancer, but I understood this was a bad deal. So I called the chief surgeon, and he explained to me we needed to await the final pathology report, which he did. But it made me realize the terror that patients can have when they access their records. So I think to allay the anxiety and the anger, they need to speak to some healthcare professional, may not have the final answer, but can put their mind to rest about this. Let me give you another example. One of our patients had a resection of metastatic disease in the liver from the colon. One of the tests that we monitor is called an alkaline phosphatase. The range is 20 to 40. The patient accessed her records. The test was not 40, it was 50. She was terrified. She got on Google, and she said that this test reflected multiple myeloma, which was a bone tumor. That was a bunch of baloney. That was simply not true. She spent a miserable weekend because she had no one to access. So I think the answer to the patient, be insistent, be respectful, be proactive, but find some healthcare professional in your system that can walk you through this if it's on a weekend.
And how many times, Pam, have we talked about, as Dr. Ed just said, looking for credible resources online, and Dr. Google is not always right.
Yep. Right. The other nightmare that we're dealing with every day is the tsunami of artificial intelligence. The tsunami of artificial intelligence. And it's absolutely chilling the power of this technology. For example, probably one of the most aggressive forms of AI right now, and I'll give you the name of it, and it's been endorsed by some of our internal medicine specialists. This is a website which is Open Evidence, one word, openevidence.com. Openevidence.com. Now, I have to tell you, I come from a thoroughbred racing background. My father was a professional handicapper. He represented jockeys and he was a bettor. So I was asked to write a short article about the top five jockeys in the world. So I thought, rather than go to the library, let me go to Open Evidence. So I put in characteristics of the top five jockeys. True story, in 4 seconds, the world's literature came out on my printer to my right with a dozen references, none of which were older than 2 years of age. So this is transforming everything. This is transforming everything. Now, ChatGPT is now part of the terminology. Patients can access this. However, at the end of the day, there is no substitute for that knee-to-knee, face-to-face, eye-to-eye contact with a concerned patient by a conscientious provider to really walk through these things. And now the concern is, gee, will the providers be eliminated? The answer is no, but what will happen? You have a complicated problem. You go to a university of X, Y, and Z. Many patients are losing trust in the system. Gee, Dr. Welby, I really like you and I believe you, but let's have you filter my data through artificial intelligence just to be certain you're not missing something. So right away, it's adversarial.
Yeah, nothing really should replace that human face-to-face contact, especially when we're talking about a disease like cancer.
Yes, and by seeing a patient walk, by looking the way they're dressed, by looking at the family, it's a rich tapestry of information. If the belt is much tighter than it used to be, that meant that the patient is losing weight. If the patient is sort of disheveled and unkempt, perhaps there's chemical dependency. If the spouse or partner has had broken bones, if she seems fearful, if there are bruises, that could indicate some other issues. So Zoom is great, but that postage stamp caption does not really give you the true verdict of what's going on with that patient.
Needs to be in person.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not convenient. It's very financially viable for many organizations. It is reasonably acceptable for some psychiatric and psychological issues. But if you and I have a serious problem, we owe it to ourselves to get in that car, get on the bus, and go see someone who's a credentialed expert in that area.
That's right. That's right. You were talking about advance directives and lining out your wishes. And I would be remiss if I didn't jump in here and remind our listeners about another podcast we did about a year or so ago, Pam, with our people from Five Wishes.
Yes.
That's a wonderful organization. That's a wonderful product that you can do and do in the comfort of your home. And depending on your state requirements, doesn't even have to be notarized. It can just be witnessed and, you know, encourage you to go check out Five Wishes.
Yes, yes.
And take advantage of that organization.
Right. And what I have found, right, when there are collectibles, when there's assets, when there are deliverables, when there's corn futures, when there's cattle, when there's livestock, it is an absolute nightmare when this is not spelled out. Mm-hmm. And if it's not written down, it does not happen. And then one of the stepsons, well, grandma promised me the silver. No, no, you get the bazooka, I get the boat. And I have a litany of nightmares where people did not take their time and do this in the light of day when you've had a good night's sleep, you've had a cup of coffee, not under the glare of the monitor in the emergency room.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Ed, you talked about in your book the 8 commandments for living well. Can you discuss with our listeners what are the 8 commandments?
Okay. There really are not 8. I thought that was just, I was going to put the 10 commandments, the 8 beatitudes, that sort of thing. But it's not brain surgery. I think we all know that about 90% of our quality of life and our length of our life depend on 2 things. That's all. Don't drink to excess. Don't smoke. Have friends and relationships. By all means, exercise on a regular basis. I can hear the listeners groaning at this because nobody does it. And the ideal is 150 minutes of exercise a day. I should share with you, my wife Peggy and I are vegetarians. I can hear the audience groaning in your part of the country, but we simply don't eat meat. And the reason I try to stay healthy is that if I die, Peggy's second husband will get my golf clubs, my dog, and all the things that are left behind. So there's an incentive to live as long as possible. And equally importantly, camaraderie. Having friends is as important as not smoking. Minneapolis Tribune is our major newspaper here in Minneapolis. And there's an article this morning that says that each of us, and Ryan, pay attention to this, especially men, spend 9 extra hours a week totally alone compared to 10 years ago. So we've become a land of isolationists. Growing up on the East Coast, every town had the Elks, the Knights of Columbus, the Moose, the VFW. Now, a lot of these organizations are going by the wayside because the memberships are decreasing. There is a book called The Blue Zones. The Blue Zones. These are the 5 parts of the world where people live on average more than 100. And they've been extensively studied, and the characteristics of all of these patients is exactly the same. Meaning, purpose, and engagement. Look what happens to many of our elderly citizens. They are not acknowledged, and their lives may not be ideal. They follow a plant-based diet. They're physically active, and they have some sense of spirituality, namely meaning and purpose. But I think the key thing is an acknowledgement by society that they are important and they are valuable.
You know, those 8, potentially 10 commandments, they all seem so simple, right?
It seems
so simple. And I'm guilty of course, not following all of those. But it's one of those things, it's like we know, but it is so hard. Why do you think that is, Dr. Ed?
In my own world, I grew up at racetracks on the East Coast. And my father would represent jockeys to the trainers, for which he was reimbursed 30% of what the jockeys made. So there was some serious money to be made. If the jockey showed up weighing more than 118 pounds, they didn't ride and we didn't eat. So what was driven into my little brain as a little reptile, if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to go the distance. The world belongs to the fit and the focused, especially today. For example, the average attention span, if we're looking at a screen, is 40 seconds. 40 seconds. If we're interrupted, it'll take us 25 minutes to get back to where we were. So the pace of life is blistering. If we are not on top of our game, we get left behind. And I think as a culture, we are a fairly soft people. I have a heated steering wheel in my new car. Give me a break. its steering wheel. And we had a previous car where only part of the steering wheel was heated. And I was whining to the dealer. And I'm almost embarrassed to tell you this in public, but here I am complaining about a heated steering wheel. Hundreds, give me a break. This was not going to Hollywood. These were tough, hard people, but we become soft. And medicine today is focused on giving the patient something, a pill, a vaccine, a surgery, rather than sitting down and trying to decipher the disease of the soul, which is pandemic, disease of the soul. But the bottom line, move and follow a plant-based diet, and that could eliminate a lot of life's miseries.
You talk about seeing your doctor regular, but you also talk about how to talk to your doctor. How can patients feel more comfortable talking to their physicians, voicing their concerns when they know they have that limited time with the physician?
And I hope our audience knows that we didn't rehearse this. I would invite our listeners to log on to our website. It's called www.askdoctored.com. And we posted a blog about 2 weeks ago, how to talk till your doctor will listen. Okay, so number one, you have to write down your concerns. No more than two or three. Cough, shortness of breath, I'm not sleeping, I have blood in my bowels, that sort of thing. Number one, write it down. Number two, bring someone with you. Bring someone with you. Number two, make certain that the appointment is either early in the day or the first appointment in the afternoon, because there's a human element of fatigue. Later in the day, the doc is drained. He's trying to catch up on the electronic health record, and you may not get that solid 11 minutes. Before he or she has their hand on the door and they're going out the door, we have the right to say, "Doc, I don't feel comfortable. I shared with you I have this pain in my knee. It's disabling me. What are we going to do about this? I need your help. This is a partnership." Okay, what about a PET scan? What about a dog scan? Tell me the pros and cons. Oh, by the way, if we do this blood test, how do I get the results? If nobody calls me, what do I do? So I think we also need to access that record to be certain that the doc has listened and written down what you're concerned about. But to go into their office by yourself with something you're concerned about is not a good investment. This will not turn out well.
Yeah, we've talked, Pam, on numerous occasions how patients are the consumer. And so if you go to, as you said, Dr. Ed, you go to the car dealership and you want a black car, and all they have are white cars and green cars and brown cars and red cars, and you want a black one, you're probably going to go somewhere else.
Yes.
And same thing
you
with
need
this.
To have trust and a relationship with that provider. Your life is on the line. This is high stakes. So if my provider and me don't see eye to eye, if we're on a different wavelength, everybody doesn't love everybody, I would feel comfortable going to the appointment people, going to the desk attendant, going to somebody, say, "Gee, Dr. Jones, he's right on the money. He's a rock star, but we don't really hit it off." I would feel comfortable if maybe I might be able to see someone else. Nothing negative about the dog. He's a great guy or she's wonderful. But I didn't get the sense that she was really engaged with my situation.
Yeah.
You also talk about second opinions. A lot of patients are afraid to ask for that second opinion because they're afraid that it's going to offend the provider. What would you tell someone?
Let me give you another personal story. As I mentioned, Peggy and I are marathoners. We're always training. We're always looking for that magical race, and fitness is just embedded into our DNA. A couple of years ago, Peggy developed right knee pain, and this was a real bummer.
So we saw some people in our home community. They did X, Y, and Z, and she continued to be uncomfortable. And I was not satisfied in just taking a bunch of medicines. And we did some homework, as any patient can do, to find out who's the expert in this area. And we found someone who was not a physician, but a board-certified physical therapist, and had worked with a professional National Football League team. And the first thing he said after his examination, "I think we can help you. I think we can fix this." And he suggested some conservative measures, and things got better. So if I'm a doc, and I am a doc, and the patient says, "Gee, Dr. Ed, what would you think if I went to the University of X, Y, or Z?" Would you? No reasonable physician would be offended. In fact, I would encourage the patient to go there because maybe I missed something. I'm not offended. Maybe we can each learn something. So I think we should just be comfortable to say, "Gee, let's be honest. I'm just not at peace to continue what we're doing. We're not making any progress. Let's take a detour and see Dr. So-and-so at the University of X, Y, or Z." You owe it to yourself. There's no, when it comes to health, every day is game seven, to use a sports analogy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that being in the rural area that we're in and being in a very prominent medical center like you're talking about there in Mayo, I know a lot of people, as we talked, make it from here to there for second opinions, third opinions. And I know that you guys probably get a lot of times the question of, "Well, can they do this back home?" You know, and I think a lot of times too, to piggyback on what you were saying, Pam, about being afraid to ask for a second opinion and maybe go to an MD Anderson or go to a Mayo. But then if it's very similar, because it is such a hardship to go all that direction, I think, you know, a lot of times the question is, "Would you work with my home medical oncologist? And can we kind of put this together to where I don't have to travel all those ways?" Yes. What would you say to that, Dr. Ed?
And Ryan, almost always the answer is absolutely yes. We can partner with, we can work with Dr. So-and-so who's in a small town in Texas or Oklahoma, because almost all oncology protocols are nationalized. In other words, there's a website for the treatment of every conceivable cancer. And these guidelines are available to all oncologists. So it's almost inconceivable that the University of Texas, the University of Oklahoma, has some treatment that we are not all aware of. Yeah. Because we go to the same journals, we go to the same websites, we go to the same meetings. So it's inconceivable that someone working in their garage has a couple of medicines that's going to fix everything. Yeah. Now, it gets complicated when you have, let's say, PET scans done in Alabama, and then you have follow-up PET scans in Georgia and another PET scan in the state of Washington. That's where problems come up. So in an ideal world, the images ideally are done in the same place, on the same machines, interpreted by the same people. Now, sometimes that's not practical. We understand that. And one has to recognize. Well, let me give you an example. There's a wonderful woman that we know here in Rochester who had an abnormality in her mammogram. Came to Mayo Clinic, and the breast people said, "Yes, we can see something. Thing. We think this is of some concern, but I think we should do a repeat mammogram in 6 months, and you can have that in Chicago and mail the mammogram to us." My reaction is no. Chicago is 7 hours by car. Let's have you come up to Mayo. Not a big deal. Couple bucks of gas. Stay over in a motel, and let's have the same mammogram people look at the studies that are done with the same philosophy at the same place. So we just have to recognize that there are subtleties, but we have to be realistic.
Sure. Wow. A lot to unpack, Pam.
There is, and I'm sure we could go on and on and on, but You know, I want to make sure that we give our listeners the opportunity to maybe get the book. Dr. Ed, could you tell them where to find that book once again?
Sure. Probably the simplest thing is to go to Amazon. I'm smiling. Everything in the world is on Amazon. But yeah, that's the easiest thing to do would be How Not to Be My Patient. And the last name would be Cragan, C-R-E-A-G-A-N. And it's a book of empowerment. It's written for civilians. It's written for the normal people who have legitimate concerns about health and well-being. So in a sense, this is the key to the kingdom to make our lives more meaningful and more joy-filled.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Ed, before we get to our last segment, is there anything else you'd like to impart to our listeners on how not to be your patient?
I think the major thing is that the healthcare delivery system is broken. Everybody recognizes this. Everyone listening to us has some nightmare stories. So if ever we need to take care of ourselves, it's now. And our book talks about what we can do on an everyday basis starting today to ensure that we will have the quality of life that we need and we deserve.
Very good.
And the next step starts today, right?
The next step starts today. And if we put this off, something could happen. There's blood in the urine. There's a lump in the neck. We're having trouble speaking. I mean, now we need to really take charge because Marcus Welby has left. Yeah. And the primary care physicians are under enormous stress, and they may not be there for us in that dark moment at the 11th hour.
Yes. Well, Dr. Ed, thank you so much for enlightening our listeners. And that brings us to our last segment. We are sponsored by the Auto Inc. family. Do you have an Auto Inc. inspiring moment that you would like to share with our listeners?
Yes, absolutely. I have here in front of me a typed Mayo Clinic record dated December 6th, 1972. And I had just come to Mayo at that time, and the record was typed. And this described a gentleman who had a tennis ball size cancer on his right neck, going from the tip of his ear to his collarbone. This was rock hard, and this was a mass of malignant melanoma. And at that time, he went to some of the major universities in the upper Midwest, and they told him, this is hopeless, this is unresectable, go to Mayo Clinic. So in one afternoon, he saw the top three physicians in the world at that time dealing with this problem. One was a Dr. John Woods. There was also Dr. David Ammon, and also a Dr. Scanlon. So these were the top three players in the world at that time. And they told him, there's nothing we can do. This is fatal. Go home, get your affairs in order. Now, I had just come to Rochester. My pager went off and I picked it up, and it was Dr. Ammon, who was the chair of medicine. So when the boss pages you, obviously you want to listen. He says, Eddie, I want you to come over here and meet this patient and see if he has any questions. So I went over, I knocked on the door. And when I walked into the room, I saw the patient and his wife. They were probably in their late 50s. And I looked into the face of total desolation. Think about this. You've traveled at great expense. You've come here. The three top players tell you there's nothing we can do. And I said, Mr. So-and-so, what can I do for you? And he said to me, how long will I live? So think about that. Two strangers, two individuals who had never met, and the patient asked me how long he will live. I said, I don't know, but we should see you back in 6 months, which would have been May. To my amazement, he comes back in May. I thought he would have passed away. And the baseball size mass was now about the size of a golf ball. I asked him where he went for treatment, and he brusquely said, I don't want to talk about it. I just want to go home. Okay. 6 months later, which was in December, he comes back And where there had been a mass, there was now a divot. There was a hollowing out. The mass was gone. And I saw him every 6 to 12 months for almost 30 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And I asked him what happened, and he never would tell me. But then his wife said, tell Dr. Ed what happened. And here's what he told me after 30 years. He walked out the front door of Mayo Clinic. It was about 20 below zero. And the first building he came to was a church, St. John's Church. He said that his tears were bouncing off the linoleum, and he had the sense of someone sitting on his left side, which was the side with the cancer. This person was a shawled woman, elderly, bent over. She turns to her right side, touches his neck, and basically said, hang in there, this is going to be okay. A second later, his wife came in on his right side, which was his normal side. He said, Ethel, I want you to meet someone. He turns to his left side. This person was gone. He was embarrassed to tell me this. I don't know what this experience was. I don't know whether this was a spirit, an angel. I don't know, but I do know it took him 30 years to tell me this. So the message for me at that time, that there's a healing dimension beyond the CAT scan and the PET scan and the surgeon's scalpel that we need to embrace and recognize as part of the healing process. He didn't make this up. He was touched by something at that point in history in 1972.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, man.
What a miracle.
Yes.
Yes. And interesting, when I've told this story many times, and if the audience is primarily women, they get it right off the bat. This was a spirit. This was an angel. When it's physicians who are kind of tired and elderly, they sort of dismiss it as science fiction. But this was no science fiction. Here, I have in my hand the typed Mayo Clinic record. So this is not science fiction. Something happened. And then I said, well, Mr. Salto, if you tell me what happened, I'll give you a 40% cut on your Mayo bill. Well, that's not true, but I fabricated it. And he said, no, make it a 60% cut. So we got along real well. And this was his story. And this is my story.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Goodness. Wow. Dr. Ed, you have unpacked a lot here. And I think
thank you.
It is every piece of every shred of piece here that we've discussed is very pertinent, very valuable, very important for our listeners to take to heart. Go to Amazon, get his book, How Not to Be My Patient, get the book, and live better. I think those are some of our key takeaways. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Ryan, you and Pam are rock stars, because these are hard to do. But you really drilled into the essence of what we and you all are all about on the journey of wellness.
Yes.
It's very important. You know, to our listeners, Dr. Ed just left off right there, the journey of wellness. And that's what we try to provide here at the Cancer Survivorship Center, whether it's a counseling visit, whether it's a dietitian visit, whether it is a chaplain visit, whether it is an exercise.
Relaxation. Yeah.
Whether it's yoga, whether it's a walking group, a water exercise, all of these things are on your path to wellness. And we encourage you, it's the beginning of the new year. Stay hold to that, you know, whatever your resolution is of being healthy and eating better or whatever the case may be. But we have things to help you along that path. So we encourage you to take heart to what Dr. Ed has shared today. And find a place to plug in, right, Pam?
Absolutely. If you need some assistance, make sure you give us a call at 806-331-2400 or check us out on the internet at 24survivorship.org.
Dr. Ed, thank you so much for joining us today.
Ryan and Pam, thank you. And I might add that your website is easy to navigate. And it's just the Rosetta Stone of information, the GPS. Of wellness.
Well, take it from our physician friend right now, listeners. Go to our website, come in and enjoy the things that we have to offer, because it costs you just your time. That is it.
Well, what a gift. What a gift.
Yes. Well, thank you again, Dr. Ed. Thank you to our listeners. Pam, I tell you, I know we say it often, we have some amazing information that gets shared on this podcast, and I hope our listeners take it to heart.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. You folks have been wonderful and gracious and hospitable. So thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. To our listeners, share this podcast with your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers. And this is honestly, Pam, you know, this is another one of those episodes that's not 100% cancer related. These are things that you can do to be better at your life, to better your with your doctor's visits, whatever the case may be. It does not have to be an oncology visit, which I think is so neat about this podcast, Pam. So many times our stuff just crisscrosses over, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It does. Well, thank you again, Dr. Ed. Thank you to our listeners. And make sure you join us next time for another great episode of Beyond the Ribbon.
Thanks again for listening to Beyond the Ribbon. We'd like to extend a special thanks to the Auto Inc. family of dealerships, as they have supported the 24 Hours in the Canyon Cancer Survivorship Center since 2016. For more information on the Cancer Survivorship Center, please visit our website at 24survivorship.org.